Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to the Lifebook VIP podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. It's emotional month, and we are back in the studio. My father, John Butcher, is here.
Hello, everybody. Hey, Jordan.
Good to be here, man. Emotional month. Powerful category, deep category.
Totally.
I was thinking of something fascinating when it came to the emotional category specifically. And that's, you know, I've always been interested in how vastly different people's life books are from one another. Specifically, if you take a look at the career category, for instance, the high-powered entrepreneur's career category page is going to look very different than the Hawaiian surfer guy's career category. You know what I mean?
True.
But emotional is interesting in the sense that so many people have a very similar, simple goal. More happiness, more fulfillment, more pride, more of the positive emotions.
Right.
And less sadness, less anxiety, less of the negative emotions. So most people are headed towards the exact common goal.
That's true. That is how this category behaves. As we've said so many times in the Lifebook program, the Aristotle quote, happiness is the most important thing in the world, the whole aim and end of human existence. So clearly, happiness is the dominant emotion that we all want to experience. It's funny, I was just reading a book today by Sanjeev Chopra, my dear friend, Deepak's brother, and it's on finding your purpose in life. It's called The Two Most Important Days, based on a Mark Twain quote, the two most important days are the day you were born and the day you figure out why. Killer quote, right?
Totally.
And this book is about finding your happiness through purpose. And he says in this book that they were doing this research study and at Harvard Medical, when you type in happiness in Amazon, there are more than 200,000 books on the subject of
it. Wow.
That just shows you how deeply rooted this quest for happiness is in the human condition. So yeah, you're right, Jordan. At the end of the day, this is a category where we all seem to share sort of a common destination.
Yeah, no one's like, yeah, I'll do with less sadness, but I don't mind a little anxiety sprinkled in here.
Exactly.
Like, that's kind of my flavor of the emotional category.
And you know, it's funny because I'm writing the scripts to Lifebook version 2, which is going to be released this summer. Holy cow. 11 years after I wrote those first scripts, you know, it's going to be amazing. We're super excited about it. And so this week I was working on the new and improved script for the emotional video. And I realized that at the end of the day, what Lifebook is about, everything we do in this company and in the program and in our own Lifebooks is, you know, all the goal setting, all the challenges, the exercises, the measuring and reporting we do on the assessment, the inspiration we provide, the motivation, everything we do around Lifebook is designed in one way or another to help you move closer to a happier, more fulfilling life. That is our mission. And so, that's a great observation to open this podcast up with, man.
Yeah, and the emotions propel you so much. Like you said, the accountability partners, the tracking and measuring, that fills you. That fills you up. It's very fulfilling.
Yeah, absolutely.
But let's move on to the listener questions here.
Okay. Because
we've got a bunch of them, and they are fantastic. First question from Tammy S. Do you ever feel super negative, no matter how hard you try not to? If so, what tools do you use to overcome it as quickly as possible?
Well, my answer to that is yes, I do, because I'm a moody artist. You know, some people are just genetically predisposed to sing the blues sometimes. And I'm one of those people that has a personality type that sometimes just blues come through me for no reason. I'm playing the blues, right?
Right.
Everything's going fine. It's a beautiful sunny day outside. But I'm a moody artist. And, you know, a lot of times for artists, that's where that is where some inspiration comes from. You know, need a little pain to get you going in one way or another. Don't like that really, but that is the deal. And so you guys have heard me say this before. It's like a broken record. The inoculation to just about everything is gratitude. I mean, if you can get yourself in those moments to focus on what is going awesome in your life. Focus on what you're thankful for. You don't think you have anything to be thankful for? Pick up a book and read about Europe in the 1340s when 2/3 of the people died of friggin' bubonic plague. That'll make you thankful just automatically. Read Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. You know, do something to snap yourself out of it. Problem is, Jordan, sometimes we get in that state and we don't want to let it go.
Exactly.
Isn't that true? You're ruminating. Yeah. I'm not letting it go. I'm going to stay pissed off all day. You got to break that.
It's true. And that's the thing. I made a big connection because I'm also like a broken record. You guys are going to get sick of me saying this, but I'm really, really into the cold showers. And I was thinking about what you've said about gratitude, which is if you're in a state of gratitude, you can only hold that in your mind.
Yeah.
That's the only thing you can hold in your mind. You literally can't feel anything else.
It literally crowds out all mm-hmm. other negative emotions. I guess your cold showers do that too, don't
they? Not only do they do that, but sometimes you're indulging and you don't want to do the gratitude technique well. If you really don't want to even commit to that, there is one more thing you can do, which is just throw yourself in the cold shower. If you can get yourself to physically do that, you can't be.
Is that right?
You can't just be anxious. You can't be depressed. You can't be.
You just go into survival mode.
You just go completely blank. It's like the ultimate form of meditation,
wow,
by
wild.
The way. You can't even hold happiness in your brain. You're just like completely.
That's
just
unbelievable.
So that, to answer your question, I do think that's the quickest way to do it.
Man.
It's not a long-term solution, but if you need to snap out of it, turn the shower really cold and just use your anger, you know, and your sadness, you know,
that's out of control.
As a propellant and jump in that cold shower.
I'll never do that ever. I'm
it's
a tiger.
So good for you.
I hate cold.
It's so good for you.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you're hitting that, Jordan, because I know that works. Wim Hof is a friggin' amazing
beast.
Human.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you keep hitting that mm-hmm. because I'm not going to ever do that.
Definitely.
Oh, here's another one, man. Here's another very, very powerful thing to focus on. Sometimes it can snap you out. It's maybe not quite as magic as gratitude, but forgiveness. Just forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it needs to be directed toward yourself.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Just blanket forgiveness.
Yeah.
Is another very.
That's a more challenging one, I feel, but probably even more healing.
Yeah. I'm not sure that anything's
more,
deeper.
More long term,
I agree.
Say.
Yeah. It can address deeper seated issues.
Right.
So, yeah. So, gratitude, forgiveness, and cold showers.
There you go. Yeah. Physical, mental,
top
spiritual.
Three.
Yeah. Thanks for opening up with that, Tammy. Next question from Martha H. Do you think creativity lives in the emotional category? How do you nurture this quality in your own life?
Creativity. You guys, here's the deal with creativity. It probably should have been a category all on its own.
You're an artist who put together a program that didn't have art as part of the categories.
And Jordan, that's probably exactly that. I couldn't see the forest for the trees.
Sure.
I mean, when I look back on, 12 years ago conceiving this program, I feel like if I were to redo the whole DNA, which is difficult now, we've got a way to handle these things that we miss. For instance, category 13 is about sex. It's, mm-hmm. that's been our category that we focused on sort of privately all these years. We're starting to release some really interesting material about that. I think we'll probably do a module on creativity at some point.
That'll
just
be
a
awesome.
Premise, vision, purpose, strategy module, because it's so incredibly important. And it's one of those things where, just like all the other categories, the interconnectivity, creativity can be applied to any area of your life.
Yeah.
You can do creative health and fitness workouts,
mm-hmm.
Wrestling with the kids. You can just bring it. Remember the sword fights we used to do?
Oh,
and
totally.
It's what kept me in shape.
Oh, man. And parenting, stimulating imagination.
Exactly.
Intellect, spirituality.
You love relationship?
Yeah, totally.
Bottom line is, I don't necessarily think that creativity lives in a certain category. I think it's important enough that we should probably focus on it individually, and I think we're going to get to that soon. How I sort of nurture that quality in my own life, being an artist, I'm very disciplined about it. I discovered this that I'm going to share with you about 5 or 6 years ago, and I've shared this before. It's the strategy that I shared in my in week 6 of the VIP boot camp, which is about habits. So I created a habit that I will get up in the morning, and my first 2 to 3 hours are spent on my creative work,
mm-hmm.
and that has been a game changer for me. So disciplined. I do not check email unless I'm having a buffer day. Every once in a while, mm-hmm. I will set aside a day just to get all my busy work
done.
Yeah,
sometimes you have to.
Right, but when I'm in one of my regular work days, my first 2 to 3 hours, which is when my brain functions the best,
mm-hmm.
is spent specifically on creativity. I'm extremely disciplined about it, and that has paid huge dividends for me.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for the question, Martha.
Next question from Jeff M. How do you apologize when you lose your cool, especially when you don't feel like apologizing?
That's a great question. Well, Missy and I have always had a deal that we, I think I share this in the Lifebook program. When you're like in a fight with your spouse, or you guys are cranky at each other, or whatever, you're being snappy, or if you get in an argument, sometimes if you get angry enough, you literally just can't think straight. You're right. Stupid. You're like insane.
Seeing red, like you can't.
Yeah, you're temporarily insane.
It's a strange, yeah.
And we learned early in our relationship that you're not thinking right. Mm-hmm. And so we are very careful not to interact with each other when we're crazy like that. Mm. What we usually do is just move away, give each other some space, and then we've always had this thing where the first one of us to come to their senses, that's literally how we see it, mm-hmm. to come to their senses mm-hmm. and find the emotional fortitude and strength to apologize is the hero.
Right.
Right? Because that takes strength. It's easy to stay pissed off and you know, do nothing about your situation, just stew. Mm-hmm. It's hard to muster the wherewithal to admit you were wrong or whatever. I actually like apologizing to Missy when I'm wrong. It makes me feel better about myself. It makes me feel like a badass as opposed to a, you know.
Makes you feel like a better husband.
That's right. And one of the things that I do to get there, if we're having, you know, trouble or whatever, and I'm in that state where I'm not thinking straight, I make myself think about all the amazing times we've had, all the amazing joy and happiness Missy's brought into my life, and you know, just how much she's done for me and us and everyone mm-hmm. over the years. And I literally make myself think about that. And that, what is that? That's gratitude.
There it is again. Yeah, shows up a lot on this podcast.
Exactly.
Let's rename it to the Lifebook Gratitude Podcast.
Exactly.
It's not a bad idea.
And that really helps smooth things out to get you to the point where you feel good about saying, hey, sweetie, I'm sorry, I've been dealing with a lot of stuff and I shouldn't have said that or whatever it mm-hmm. is. Right. So that's kind of how we handle it. We both are in a race to see who can come to their senses first and apologize.
When it comes to your significant other, you said give each other space. It literally does help to have a large square foot home.
You are right about that.
It really does. If you're stuck in the same studio apartment together, it's rough.
You're right.
Give each other space and, you know, have the wherewithal to provide that space when it's needed.
Clearly, man, you're 100% right about that. You need physical space.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I would also look into something called the five love languages. Are you mm-hmm. familiar with Gary Chapman's five love
Absolutely.
Languages?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's a great one when it comes to spousal conflict. But what about when you have to apologize to someone who's not your spouse? That's kind of a different thing.
Yeah. You know, well, usually they're not right in your face the whole time, which
exactly.
is nice. So you see, you really have time to think about it. And I mean, that's usually picking up the phone and doing what you need to do, you know, and I've been there a lot. I'm sure everyone listening has. One thing that I want to say, just going back to the love relationship thing is Miss and I had to learn early on, how to communicate with each other. My deal was when a conflict arises, the worst thing you can do is walk out of the room. That means you don't love me and you're not interested enough in fixing the problem to stay in the ring and work it out.
Right.
Even if we have to get a little bit heated, caring about this relationship and loving each other means that we're willing to go through this tough time to get to the solution.
Right.
Missy's experience was the worst thing you can ever do in a situation like that is raise your voice and get heated. That means you don't love me. That means you're not respecting me. You're not hearing me. Much better to move away from each other until things cool down and we can talk to each other civilly. Mm-hmm. So we had two different ways of coming at, and we learned that like in the first 2 years of our relationship, and the Enneagram book was what taught us that, Jordan.
Right.
So when Miss and I learned about her Enneagram type, which is a peacemaker, and my Enneagram type, which is the challenger, the polar opposites of each other,
right.
That one thing right there fixed everything, taught us how to communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, we've been really respectful and conscious of each other's communication styles, and that's really helped a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing you should do is understand your Enneagram type is a big deal, and we talk about that all the time too.
Yeah, and then just pull the trigger, man.
That's right.
Just pull the trigger.
And man up. Man up.
It'll get easier next time. It's like working out a muscle.
Exactly.
Just pull that trigger, Jeff. You'll kill it. All right, next question from Nick K. How do you get over, quote, imposter syndrome or not feeling deserving of success? And I didn't know what that was, so I Googled it for the audience. The concept describing individuals who are marked by an inability to internalize their accomplishments and a persistent fear of being exposed as a fraud. I have thoughts on this, but you go first.
Well, that is a partial definition, in my opinion. So it can come from one of two things. It can come from your inability to internalize your accomplishments, or it can come from the fact that you are actually an imposter. So there can be a valid aspect of it, absolutely, and there can be, like your definition says, that's a self-esteem issue. So self-esteem, as Nathaniel Brandon defined it, is the experience of competence to cope with the basic challenges of life, feeling competent to cope with the challenges in front of you, and the experience of being deserving of happiness. And I would say that if you've got the imposter syndrome from the standpoint that you're not able to internalize your accomplishments, in other words, you're not able to feel yourself as a person who can accomplish things and who has accomplished things, that's a kind of a deserving of happiness issue.
Sure.
Right? You're not looking at yourself as deserving of happiness. You might not be looking at yourself as competent to cope with the challenges that are in front of you. So if it's coming from a place where, and I've been on both sides of that equation.
Sure.
If it's coming from, like, you know, I grew up poor, and my dad started a company when I was in high school that started to take off, and we weren't poor anymore in high school. And in my 20s, I had a lot of opportunity because this business really exploded. And I took advantage of every single molecule of that opportunity. And I found myself, you know, not even a high school graduate, in my late 20s and early 30s, sitting across the table from Fortune 500 executives in publicly traded company boardrooms, and a lot of times it was like, what the hell?
They sure do use a lot of acronyms. I don't know what any of these acronyms mean.
So, you know, it's like, do I really belong here? But at the end of the day, I think because of the fact that I studied Nathaniel's work on self-esteem so deeply, and at that time I was really into the philosophy of Ayn Rand, objectivism, and I just was like, no one's any better than me. We're all human beings here.
That's what's huge, man. I think a lot of this has to do with comparison.
Yeah.
Because you can be competent and know that you're competent enough to cope, but you still look at the people around you, and for some reason you think, I don't deserve to be here.
Exactly.
Even though in reality you are doing fine.
Exactly.
So it's weird. It's a weird comparison thing. And I don't like that we put a syndrome label on everything, because this is something that everybody has experienced.
Well,
right?
You guys, here's the one of the smartest things that I've ever heard in this subject is the concept of backstage, front stage. Your experience of yourself is backstage. It's internal. You know how you're feeling inside. You know what you've done and what you haven't done. You know the things that you're capable of based on experience and the things that you're insecure about. You've got all these feelings of insecurity inside and all the normal human feelings that we experience. That's what we experience about ourselves. But when I'm looking at you, Jordan, I'm seeing your front stage, not your backstage.
Right.
And so a lot of people go through life thinking they're the only ones that are feeling like, you know, insecure or lack of self-confidence.
Exactly.
Or do I really belong here? Because they're comparing their backstage experience,
right,
their inner experience,
to
everyone else's face,
right,
to everyone else's front stage experience. And what you got to do to break through that is realize everyone's got a backstage experience. Everyone experiences these same kind of emotions that I do. There's no one intrinsically any better than you. I mean, yes, people have more experience. They've developed, you know, their talents in different ways, et cetera. But I'm not going to – I don't care who I'm sitting across the table from. They're a human being just like me.
Totally.
They're going to be better at a lot of things than me, and I'm going to probably be better at some things than them. So I was just able to somehow just say, I'm not sure if I belong here or not, but I'm here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do my best while I'm here.
Yeah, that's great for sure.
You know? Oh, and then I just want to say that this one last thing is that sometimes you're in a situation where you really don't belong there.
Right.
Sometimes people really do pretend. Sometimes, you know, you really are an imposter.
Right. Those are scary people generally.
Yeah, they're scary people. And I mean, I've even been in that situation myself where I'm like, okay, I don't belong here.
Sure.
Right?
And so, raise your hand.
Yeah. Excuse me. You know, so That syndrome, though, usually what people mean by that syndrome is, I've accomplished a lot in my life. Why don't I feel that inside? Why do I still feel like I don't deserve anything I have?
Right.
Well, that's a self-esteem issue. Go on NathanielBrannon.com and get some friggin' awesome books. Mm-hmm. The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem, Honoring the Self, Taking Responsibility, The Art of Living Consciously. These are the books that have changed my life.
Love it. Another question from Nick K. Back to back. How can I increase my level of empathy? How do you sense the feelings of others and try to understand their points of view?
That's a great question. And I mean, the logical answer to that question is consciousness. If you really want to understand somebody, pay attention. Really pay attention. Look at them when they're talking to you. Listen to how they're talking. Try to feel the same emotions that they're feeling. It's like, you know, that walk a mile in their moccasins thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not an expert on this subject, so I don't think I have any really profound advice, but the common sense, to me it makes sense to just really be there, be conscious, be present, and if you want to understand somebody at a deeper level. Mm-hmm. StrengthsFinders, that assessment, I think it analyzes 31 different personality strengths, if I'm not mistaken. And empathy is one of them. Mm. I'm not sure if there are like scientifically validated best practices that you can use to increase your empathy, but certainly being present to people when they're expressing their feelings and emotions, challenges and opportunities is a great place to start.
And just asking questions. Patrick Colhagen.
Being interested, yeah.
Patrick Colhagen, one of the best people in our lives. Yep. He just asks questions, and he just understands more and more, and he's just always asking questions.
Yep, so absolutely.
I think that's key. Next question from Petra. Any recommendations for books about mastering the creation of emotional states?
Yes, I do have... Well, you know, I'm not sure that there are any books that specifically talk about emotional recipes, but there are some books that will blow your mind on emotions. It's actually an audio program, and I'm not sure if it's still available. Sounds True is the company that used to distribute it. It's by a lady named Carla McLaren, and the program is called Emotional Genius. And I swear to God, that program really turned my life around when it came to emotions. The best program on describing what emotions are, where they come from, and it specifically goes into, like, there's a whole chapter on the angers, the different kinds of anger, resentment, hatred, and it breaks it down and talks about why those emotions come up, what they're in response to. It's phenomenal. Mm. So I think if you want to create emotional states in your life, the first thing that you should do is study those emotions, really understand what they are and what causes them. And then, like I said, I'm not aware of any book that really outlines recipes for creating emotional states. But the big question is, once you've defined the emotion that you want more of in your life, well, what makes you feel that emotion? Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to list, every single thing that you can think of that brings that up in your emotional body. And then you want to do more of those things. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. And I should probably write that book, Jordan, to tell you the truth, because I've spent so many years cultivating certain emotions in my life and getting very, very specific about what creates those emotions and just doing more of that stuff. And likewise, on the other side of the coin, what emotions am I unwilling to tolerate in my life? And what causes that stuff?
Yeah.
And how do I stop doing that?
Totally.
Right?
Yeah, that's profound.
Man, I'm telling you.
Intense stuff.
And by the way, I got to give Tony Robbins credit for this, because he was the first person that turned me on to the idea 20 plus years ago that you could actually create emotional states by doing certain things. Mm. And then I just ran with that. I just went wild with it.
Right. Love it. Final question from Jesse K. What emotion would you say you've spent the most energy developing an awareness of in your life? And how has that emotion blossomed or diminished, if that emotion is negative, over the years? What was your process?
That's fantastic. The process is getting clear on the emotion that you want to create, and then figuring out what creates that emotion, and then doing more of that stuff. It's as simple as that. The emotion that I've spent the most time in my life cultivating is happiness, of course. Mm-hmm. Although I've got a couple other ones here, so I'm actually going to share some emotional recipes right now. So here are some of the things that make me happy. Spending time with my family always makes me happy, and I can break that down. But Jordan, when we're all together for family, for family dinners, every single time we do that, that's fun. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a happy night every single time we're together,
no matter what.
Every single time that I go to the city with Missy for a city date, I'm going to be happy. When we have our sensual dates, our overnight dates, you can count on Thursdays every single week, I'm going to just be happy all day. Mm-hmm. Why? Because I'm with Missy in the city. I'm taking time off of work. We have a sexy, awesome, romantic time, and that always makes me happy. The ocean makes me happy. Anytime, anywhere. I love the ocean. Being in great shape makes me happy. And I like working out because I like the results that I get. I also like feeling my body. And so I, you know, that's something that not necessarily every day. Sometimes I have to make myself do it. But on the whole, that is something that really increases my happiness to work out and to be in great shape. Having money in the bank, I like that feeling.
Right.
It's that gives me a feeling of freedom and a sense that I can, you know, do what I want, when I want, where I want. Spending time in my life book always makes me feel empowered and joyful and happy. Travel, world travel is absolutely, when Miss and I look back on our lives, that's been one of our greatest sources of happiness. That has created the richest memories that we have as a family and as a couple. Hanging out with good friends. I've really done a lot of thinking about what makes me happy, and I try to do as much of that stuff as possible. Mm-hmm. Let me share a couple other ones with you here. Passion. I like feeling passion. I like adventure. I like intensity, the good kind of intensity. Again, just Missy,
right.
Always, and my awesome kids, traveling, the accomplishment of worthy goals, sitting down at the beginning of the quarter and deciding what I want the next quarter to be about. What do I want to have happen in my life and in the world this quarter?
Yeah, it's a big one.
Yeah.
I feel like especially for males.
That seems to be very masculine energy sort of driving toward that.
Exactly.
Contemporary art, one of my greatest passions. Sex, creativity, building things. I like creating things, whether it's creating a painting or redesigning a room, or I like to see the contents of my mind come into physical reality. That's a rush for me. Always has been. I love it. Creating awesome environments. I love surrounding myself with beauty and tranquility and serenity. Meeting cool, interesting people. Travel.
Right.
That really
that's big for you, man.
Yeah, it is. It's you know, that feeds my adventure bug for sure. Then another thing that Missy and I have really focused on over the years are the emotions that have to do with peacefulness, tranquility, serenity.
Right.
We've got very busy lives, and they're sometimes stressful. And so
it's more necessary at this point in your life than it was, you know, when you're in your 20s partying up.
No, you're right.
You don't yearn for it as much as when you're more established, more busy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But even back then, we had such busy lives, running a bunch of companies, having a bunch of kids, being in a big family, just all the responsibilities that we had, that we knew that we wanted our home environment to be incredibly tranquil and serene and peaceful. Mm-hmm. We wanted it to be an oasis from the stressful modern world, so that when we came home, we were nurtured by our environment. And so we did a lot of thinking about what is going to make this space more serene for us, so that it will care for us. And here are the things that we came up with. The sight and the sound of water. we're surrounded by water in our house. Mm-hmm. And you can do it with little, you know, little Japanese off-the-shelf waterfalls all the way up to what we've done, which is real, you know, rock formations and stuff. Relaxing music, that's a big one. Mm-hmm. Nothing changes the mood more than relaxing music. Trees, plants, and flowers. Being surrounded by living things somehow has that effect on you of there's just growth. It's goodness, right?
I agree. Yeah.
Spa, swimming, taking a jacuzzi, massages, that whole thing.
Man, huge underrated part of life.
Totally.
If you get a little sauna, you can build them in your backyard.
Yeah.
Like, that will change your life.
Exactly. So we have a little steam room, and we have
exactly,
a little sauna,
yeah.
and we have a little steeping tub. And man, what a huge investment in our health and fitness
exactly.
that's been over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Walking in the garden with Missy. Literally, 22 years we've been walking through this beautiful Japanese garden we built. And every single night after work, and what that's done over the years is it's built up such an association, such an incredibly deep emotional association
mm-hmm.
that literally, Jordan, first step on the path, first step that we put our foot on the path, you can just feel, whew, just grounded.
Whoa.
Just literally a peacefulness comes over
us. The day melts away.
That's right. The day just melts away and we settle into that walk and we just have a beautiful walk around our garden. Meditation. That's a good one.
Oh, yeah.
That's one
that's arguably the ultimate one if you really want to go down that road.
Yeah, exactly. And so then spending time in nature is also a big one. So those are three different emotions that I've really focused a lot on cultivating: happiness, mm-hmm. passion, and tranquility. And I've clearly defined the recipes for those things, and we run those programs as much as possible.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love the tranquility, just before we sign off here, because I think that's what in today's modern world, tranquility is harder to come by than it was. You know what I mean?
Which means it's more valuable
exactly.
and way more precious than it used to be.
Yeah. And if you don't want to, you know, take the time and all the motivation to become a meditation master, like you said, just go out for a walk
yeah.
in the woods. Time in nature is like,
huge.
It's like a cheat sheet. Leave the iPhone though.
Oh yeah.
But just go out in the woods and it's like a cheat sheet. It's like that cold shower. Suddenly you're just there.
No, 100%.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great episode. Great
Thank
questions,
you.
Everybody. Continue to send in your questions. We love it. Love answering those questions. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Lifebook Podcast. We're signing off saying have a great day.
Thanks, Jordan. Thanks, everybody. See you next month.